This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up! Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw.
Biggs time.
The Biggs Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, what a glorious morning it is. And we have the great man himself, Biggs time for 4.5 hours, ladies and gentlemen. What a reason for celebration. Our guy Brad Biggs, football man of the Chicago Tribune, is here for the day. Brad, good morning. You look spectacular, buddy.
I'm happy to be here.
You are a welcome and deserving host, and I get a little verklempt. Yesterday, for some of us, those Irishmen in the crowd that were following Rory, had picked him to win the Masters, that was an ordeal, okay? Watching a guy try to golf with like an 800-pound piano on his back was exhausting for me. Good God, 2 double bogeys? What are you doing golfing like me when you're supposed to be winning a Masters?
He got off to a really rocky start there. I think it was the second hole, and you could see his level of disappointment in himself. And you're looking at the body language, and you're like, Rory's beating Rory again here, right? And DeChambeau was hot, and you're looking at the rest of the leaderboard and saying, this thing could slip away from this guy in a flash here. I mean, because he lost the lead.
He's the first ever golfer. He became the sixth ever golfer to win a career Grand Slam, which is incredible. His name goes down with immortals. But the way that he did it, he's the first golfer ever to win the Masters with 4 double bogeys in a tournament.
Yeah, yes. Right.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. And when he was at the 13th, where he put one in the drink, that was me. That was me turning off the TV. That was me going back to other things. It took me a while to tune back in, and I was delighted to see he had returned from that.
So you really didn't stick with it?
Dustin, I turned it off a couple different times. It was like impossible to watch. I felt emotionally attached. And I think it's worse to watch a person meltdown on the golf course than anything else, because it is right here. It's between the ears. I mean, it's like when Greg Norman had that moment. It's like you're uncomfortable watching, and you feel like, I really shouldn't see this. Let this poor man dress in peace. It's like he's shaming himself publicly, and you just feel this sense of, you know, like, I can't be watching this. It's bad for humanity.
Well, and so you think the thing's slipping away from him.
I thought that was it.
And it's over. And then you get to 17, and he has that second shot where he says, go, 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 and it it's right there. And at that point, you're like, well, he can't lose.
Well, I mean...
Well, and Jim Nance said, shot of a lifetime.
Yeah.
I mean, shot of a lifetime. But then on 18, misses, what, a five-footer? Pushes it right past
well,
the hole.
Right, well, it goes in the beach first.
Yes. Yeah, first in the beach. Yes. Yeah, first in the beach, yes.
And then I had to go do a thing, and I was sitting there. And the last, I mean, I was going to sit there and watch it, and then finally I had to leave, and then I didn't see the last hole until I got home, and then I watched the final hole, and I watched the, you know, Butler's cabin and the whole nine yards, you know, the whole ceremony and all, telling his daughter she can do anything, and she's like not even paying attention. But that's on camera.
Well,
someday she'll see it.
Because you in the extra hole, Justin Rose has an unbelievable second shot.
Oh, I know.
Almost goes in the hole,
and he hits one better.
Yeah, and he hits one better, and Rose takes forever to. To putt, I'm looking at, like, is there a pace of play violation going on here?
Oh my God.
I'm kidding.
And, no, it was awful.
The putt doesn't break.
But you know what's interesting is I was reading a thing. I think it was, when did we get out of here? Friday. So he had the meltdown, right? On Thursday, he had the meltdown where he had two double bogeys in the last four holes or something. On Thursday, was it? And then Friday, I was reading a story after we got out of here about how pace of play impacted that. That whoever was ahead of him was playing so slow that he got, like, antsy after the double bogey. And that, like, he just hit a bad shot on the first one. But on the second one, he was, like, unraveling in part because he was waiting too long. So I don't know if that counts.
And there's not much worse than when you're irritated on the golf course because I mean
you need to have, like, I have a former roommate of mine who is a scratch golfer, this guy, and I mean he would hit a shot and you'd be like, oh my God, like, how did you hit that awful shot? And I would say to him, like, are you, like, how do you feel about that, are you okay? And he'd say, well, I'm not happy about it. Like, that was his he was one of these guys. Just, like, I don't think his pulse ever went up. He was just one of these really even-keeled people.
Right.
Which, for a guy like me, I mean, good God, who knows what I would do if I golfed regularly? Probably destroy things. I just couldn't handle. I would, you know, I would be throwing all sorts of clubs in water or something. I don't know what I would do. I just don't have the temperament to be a golfer. But goodness gracious, he somehow stayed positive, somehow came back. And then, as you say, he blows it. Instead of just winning the tournament, he has to go into the extra hole, and you're just like, this can't go well.
What's going to happen now?
And he won.
And then he won. He completed
and then he
it.
Wept. And
I mean, went
it was
to his
beautiful.
Knees.
Oh, it was beautiful.
I understand them replaying 18 because that's where all of the patrons are. I want to get it right. They're not called fans at Augusta. They're patrons. They're patrons.
Very good.
That's where all the patrons are, but shouldn't you go to one or
just any other hole?
Yeah,
and the one where the guy just melted down.
The one where they just played.
It's for television.
Well, exactly.
They want this quick. I mean, it took forever to get Justin Rose in the golf cart all the way back.
Yeah, from
he was up on the range, right?
No, it's not called the range. It's the tournament practice facility.
Oh, look at you. Yeah, Augusta's got different terms. Huh?
For those curious, we had some fun and then some not so fun on our Masters talk, or too much or lack thereof, depending on where you're at. But I did get a text yesterday afternoon from Mr. David.
Ah.
And I did ask permission to, if I was allowed to share this exchange. And he said, yes, of course. He said, okay, that was dramatic.
Yeah, well, that's fair.
So David,
David
was watching. He fell into the trap. But it was, I mean, what a sports day yesterday.
Oh, it was fantastic. It was a great sports day all the way around. I really enjoyed myself watching sports pretty much all day. And I had stayed up, what was it, Saturday night? And was it Saturday night? Yeah. And watched the Frozen Four. I watched the hockey final.
Okay.
And it was funny because...
Who won?
Oh, Western Michigan slaughtered them.
Really?
It was like 5-2 when I went to bed.
I was too busy watching the Cubs continue to get another hit.
Yeah, I was against the Dodgers. I was going back and I mean I was watching other things, but my wife was willing to watch the hockey final because our daughter goes to BU and they did not have a very good showing, and that Western Michigan was really good. But I was looking through the rosters of the team, and there was one guy who's with the Blackhawks, this kid Green, who they signed yesterday, and he's supposed to play. They've got, what, 2 games left? Is that the Blackhawks season?
Blackhawks have 2 regular season games.
Yeah, and this kid's going to play in these games.
The Hawks aren't in the playoffs?
Yeah, are you sure?
I heard this stat.
Did they make the play-in?
No, they didn't even make the play-in. You have no Blackhawks. You have no Rangers. You have no
Penguins.
You have no Red Wings.
Oh, wow.
All four. It's the first time it's ever happened that those four collectively are not in the postseason.
I'd seen a slightly different one where it was the Rangers, the Penguins, and one other one out east. And I looked at it and I said, well, yeah, it hasn't happened in forever because for a long period of time, they're all in the same division.
Correct.
Somebody's going
to
make
it. Somebody had to make it. Right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, how about the Jets? I mean, the Winnipeg Jets are your President's Cup champion, who the White Sox took to a shootout, or the White Sox, the Blackhawks, took to a shootout on Saturday night to wrap up the home portion of the Blackhawks schedule.
Dustin, you just buried the league. You're obsessed now with the White Sox.
I know.
They're showing against Boston the revenge of the announcers, right? Isn't that what happened? The White Sox... They won by slaughter rule, and then they came, is that like the most runs they've scored in a game this season?
Well,
they came out Friday.
The Sox most of their wins have been lopsided. Yeah, like
the first ever one run walk off win was the Louis Robert game, which I've now dubbed the Louis Robert game because he hit the 2-run homer. Then he walked, stole second, and came in on a Brooks Baldwin,
the pinch hit single to left, right? I think it was left.
I'll tell you this. You know, that Chicago Sports Network, on Friday, they have, like, extra access. It was sensational. It was a great broadcast Friday. I'm now going to make sure of any day during the week I watch the White Sox on Friday because they got to interview coaches and players. They had... Someone mic'd up, I think Brooks Baldwin, who it was very funny because he is interviewed before the game and he's like, well, everyone, have you told everyone you're going to be wearing a wire? Brooke Fletcher asked him. And he's like, yeah. And they just couldn't believe it because I never say anything. So they picked the guy.
Yeah,
who doesn't talk.
But did they pick the guy or did someone pick Brooks for them because they know he's not going to say anything that they then have to make a decision on?
Who's the guy? Is it Josh? Who's the assistant general manager? I can't think of his name, but he was in the booth for an inning.
Bannister?
No. Come on, Mulligan. Josh Barfield.
Josh Barfield.
So he's in the booth with them.
Former Indian second baseman.
Yes. Good talker. He was fine. I mean, he was revealing things, I thought. I mean, it was interesting to get his perspective. Stoney says to him, hey, you know, which is, I think, an excellent question. Do you have an arm down in the minor leagues that you guys are talking about could someday be a closer? And he responds, he names the kid from LSU that played with Skeens. What's his name?
Grant Taylor.
Grant Taylor.
Who looked good.
Looks like a starter to me, but yeah. I guess they're worried about the injuries and all this stuff. But he talked about that guy's velocity, and he had a really good training camp.
Yeah, he looked good in spring.
And he's now one of the starters in Birmingham, right? So they got the 2 lefties down there, and they got him, and they got Wickelman Gonzalez from the other guy from the
They've got some guys. But
they got guys. But I thought that was the strangest answer.
No, I thought in spring there was discussion like,
oh really?
He might have
end of game stuff.
Yeah, which end of game stuff is hard to find, and then end of game makeup. I think the Cubs are going to run into that with Presley, and he closed out the game last night in L.A. But that seems like a question mark. And I don't want to. bring up a topic that's going to make David upset, but his guy, Colson Montgomery, is really, really having a rough ride.
Well, we'll get into all this stuff.
Okay.
We won't get into Colson, but we'll get into talk during the pick six about various trade rumors floating around. Bob Nightingale, who we'll talk to at 9 o'clock, had a report over the weekend that the White Sox were in conversations with the Dodgers, and they were talking about...
Lou Bob.
Yes, about trading him. The Dodgers, as we know from watching them this weekend, are not playing great defense. They got a lot of pitchers out, but even when the pitchers come back, you gotta field the ball a little bit. So Lou Bob would be a phenomenal addition to their outfield, but he's not really hitting the ball very well. And there's a question of if that's long term, if it was because last year was no good. At any rate, they had different players they were mentioning. I was reading online some of the names. They want a top prospect in addition to the outfielder that was sent down last year.
James Outman, yeah.
Outman.
Who was really intriguing in 2023. And
then went off to Royal.
Yeah, horrendous last year.
And he also has a name I'm not sure you want on a baseball player, right? It's like...
Well, he'd be pretty good as a pitcher.
Nonetheless.
Could you convert him?
It's like, who is one of the worst names I ever heard in football was, didn't Notre Dame have a tackle? His name was Lindsey Knapp. He played for, again, he was a local guy made good, but I always thought, geez, do I want a tackle named Knapp? What happened there? What? I don't know. I just thought it was a bad football name. But Outman might be the worst baseball name I've heard in a while,
well,
right?
Again, if he's a pitcher, like he's your outman.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah.
But for a field position player, for an outfielder, oh boy.
Yeah.
Who's up, Outman? Another one?
I don't know that they can, unless Luis Robert gets really hot.
Yeah, and he had one good game.
Any return for him is probably going to be underwhelming.
Yes. But apparently the Sox were looking at Outman and a top prospect, and they were naming the top prospects.
I don't think the Dodgers...
They got six of them. Two of them are pitchers. Sox don't really want a pitcher, right?
And I don't think the Dodgers need Luis Robert right now. They got Tommy Edman playing center for him. He's all right.
Yeah, they moved him out there.
I'm
just saying, one of the guys they mentioned, though,
this
is such a long story, I'm telling you. One of the guys was a shortstop, and it's said in the comments that Colson Montgomery has gone so far off the boil that they now believe he's going to have to move to third base, so the Sox are in the market for a shortstop.
I don't think moving him is going to switch the problem here. Colson Montgomery above high A.
Yeah.
Okay? Above high A. Batting .207, and that's over 709 at bats going into yesterday.
But what is he hitting this year? He's not even hitting like, 90, right?
He's .089 going into yesterday.
Oh my God.
But so, and his stay in double A was so brief.
Yeah.
Like it was like assumed, he's ready to be challenged and pushed. And
no, he's not.
And now he's not super young.
Brad,
is he 23 now?
He's in Charlotte, which is
a hitter's park.
Exactly.
Yeah,
that scares you. The other thing is,
and I'm sorry. Apologies to Mr. Dave.
That's you should because like Colson Montgomery, Mr. David, Indiana schoolboy legend.
Yeah, he's an Indiana boy.
Indiana schoolboy legend, and I think the problem is that if a guy can only hit in the Arizona Fall League, I don't think that's really that good.
Yeah, the bat to ball skills, the striking out,
problem.
If you were stacking it up, I don't know that he's a top 10 White Sox prospect, and it's not like they're super deep there. So
I thought they had like six or seven guys in the top 100, eight guys in the top 100. But he's like 37.
No, I mean, that guy's not 100. He's not 137 in baseball He's on the way.
So you think he's out of the top 100 list?
Any serious updated list, he's not on.
Okay. That's not good. Don't tell Mr. David.
Yeah, I know. Well,
don't text him and just let him. Hey, wake up! I'm here, and your boy Colson Montgomery, yeah. No Gouda. Yeah.
Deep breaths. I'm just not gonna get triggered today.
Yeah, we're not gonna call David and get him triggered. And you just tried to. Thank God that I didn't agree with you.
Yes, yeah, that's all.
I think I called him all
Arizona
Fall Week.
That's all I have to say.
Which isn't really a compliment, is it?
On him.
That's it? Are you done
on him.
Now?
On
oh,
him.
On him. Okay,
on
we got him. We yeah. got plenty more.
Yeah, I mean, there's more. Like,
but anyway, so I just to me the part of the news is that maybe they're looking for a shortstop because guess what?
Oh, they're looking for
a shortstop of the future doesn't exist unless it's Chase Madroff.
Yeah, they
who I love.
They need
based on one series.
They need to be looking at for everything.
I got that Chase Madroff. You know, he reminds me of Nick Madrigal, only he's good.
Well,
this is what Nick Madrigal is supposed to never strike out.
Yeah,
contact
this is what he was
hitter.
Supposed to be.
This is what he was supposed to be, but he couldn't play baseball.
Yeah, I mean Nick Madrigal fourth pick in the draft.
Fourth.
A year before they took Andrew Vaughn third.
Boy, that's not a good combination. But Vaughn's still with them, I believe. There's not much evidence of that, but he's still on the roster.
But my draft is he's fantastic. Guy gets on base.
He can
play a couple positions in the infield.
Get players
as you said,
other
doesn't,
teams draft.
Doesn't that's strike it. Out when they get some better hitters in the lineup around him.
Yeah.
You really can start taking advantage of those talents to the ability to get on base with the on base. I mean, his on base percentage has been through the roof. And yesterday, he breaks up the no hitter.
The no hitter
with a two strike count. I think it was 1-2.
It was nothing.
Slider down and in.
You know what was great is they said on the broadcast, Stoney was saying, like, this is the guy that could break up a no hitter because of his bat to ball skills.
Right.
And then he did. And boy, Crochet gets out of the game and he's standing there watching them give up a run, and then there's men on second and third. You could see
on
his face.
So Crochet comes off the field, and I thought he got a really nice round of applause. Like people are standing and clapping, and I'm watching it, and I said to myself, is he going to tip the cap? And
no.
And he didn't. Like, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing that he didn't.
Did you watch him start the game? Because he didn't get the round of applause. He didn't get the 3-minute video tribute. I was hoping
they could get to him
so he would break down crying just to impact his ability to throw.
Yeah.
I think
he wasn't going to get a
3-minute video?
No.
Those kill people.
Yeah, well, they do, but he wasn't going to
couldn't play after it.
Finish off that game yesterday. He had 96 pitches. It would have been a combined no-hitter.
How do you get him out of the game though? At that point, I mean, they got him out the minute he gave up a hit.
Yeah,
I know it was 96.
I think they take him out after that.
Really?
Yeah.
What if he tells you, "I just need 3 more pitches"?
Because you had enough evidence there that he wasn't.
Yeah, he was starting to lose it.
Yeah, okay. And you just sunk all your money into him.
Yeah,
well, not all your money.
Throw his arm out,
right?
To get a no hitter.
Yeah, that wouldn't make a lot of
meaningless no hitter. But he took a no hitter longer than anyone else has, and
this
Chase
season,
Madroff
broke
was
it
there
up.
To break it up and to punish his whole team for giving up on him. They won that series, Brad. That's their first series win of the year. We were in here on Friday, and we were talking like next year has returned. Excuse me, last year has returned. I thought they were worse than they were last year because they didn't have an 8-game losing. I was really disappointed in the White Sox when we came in here on Friday because I frankly don't know that I can sit through another year of that and still remain a guy that even is going to sit through another game of it, right? I mean, it feels like they're at a tipping point. So it was nice to see a huge crowd show up, and it was nice to see him get a big win on Friday, and then they won a series, so congratulations.
Yeah, I just think the key with them is you've got to have real kind of measured expectations in terms of what you're going to see from them this season because
they're going to be off.
Right. The first you know, four games of the season, you're looking at it, you're saying, hey, the starting pitching has been lights out.
Yeah.
This is fantastic.
Yeah.
And then things start to look, as you said, like last year, and then they catch a Red Sox team that's scuffling a little bit, and they put the ball in play, and they take a series, and I just think you got to be real measured with them because as horrendous as they were last year,
awful.
They had Crochet.
Yeah, I had Crochet.
They had Eric Fetty.
Fetty was good.
And they've
I know.
They've got some unproven guys now that have, again, looked pretty good. We're dealing with super small
sample sizes. Agree. All right, we've got the pick six next, and that is where we will deal with the big news of the day, which, of course, is Justin Steele. Brandon found Dustin just in a fetal position down in the lobby this morning and had to aid him to the elevator and up here to do the – you did a great job, buddy, playing hurt. We'll give him supportive hugs during the various breaks. But pick six is next. We got Big Z in today. We're going to have some fun. Mullion Haw on the score.
Eight.
It's pick six with Mullion Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How gutted were you yesterday with word Justin Steele, who went on the 15-day disabled list on Wednesday, will undergo flexor tendon surgery, miss the rest of the 2025 season? Did the rest of the April schedule just get considerably worse? Don't believe they'll have to make a trade to replace him.
I honestly think they have to make a trade to replace him. I don't know if who's the guy from the Marlins, Sandy Alcantara. I don't know how much money how much of your pieces, how much money. I don't know how that would go.
I think you'd have to give a lot.
But I am aware of that. But I feel like they gave a lot up to get Kyle Tucker, and he's a 1-year rental. And you cannot now not have pitching. You can't lose one of your two best pitchers and not respond in some fashion. And I don't know enough about what's going down in the minor leagues or how soon Assad is back. I know the names. I just don't know if they can buy enough time. I also don't know if they could get somebody relatively inexpensive in there and do something, you know, if, say, there's a team locally that has a left-handed veteran pitcher that they're willing to trade. Would you make a move like that? Would you give up anything in a move like that for Martin Perez? And I'm joking, kind of, but I'm just saying that's a living, breathing human that has eaten some innings. I don't know if that's kind of where you need to be, but you need help. You can't lose a player this important to you for a calendar year and then say, pretend like it's you're not in a 90 or bust situation, right? We all know everybody's job's on the line, the whole program. They need to respond to this other than to promote someone.
Well, you started getting that feeling on Friday, I believe it was, or some social media things.
Anytime second opinion is said for a baseball pitcher, like you don't even need to wait for what comes after that. You're like, okay, this is really bad news.
Right. You knew he was going to miss more than two starts at that point on Friday. You just then on Sunday, kind of with everything else going on, oh, by the way, your you know, maybe Ace is having reconstructive surgery and, you know, is gone for 25. And you still don't know the extent of it until they, according to Craig Council, until they get in there, they're really not going to know.
It could be Tommy John, right?
Right.
They don't know what
until they... It's not, whatever it is, it's not good. I think they can piece it together for a period of time here, assuming the other guys stay healthy. Colin Ray started last night out in L.A. They can stretch him out a little bit. He was competitive as a starter for the Brewers last season. Javier Assad, you would think, could be back in a couple weeks if all goes well from the oblique. Jordan Wicks is in the mix. I wouldn't count on Cade Horton, though, guys. Cade Horton threw 34 innings last season. And in 2023, Cade Horton had 88 innings in the minor leagues. So to me, if you're getting 90 innings out of Cade Horton, it whatever level, and combine them this year, that's a win. Like, you've had – there's some durability concerns with him, and you can't go from throwing 88 innings and then 34 to throwing 140. It wouldn't seem wise to me. I think there will be some other pitchers available too. It's a little early for that market to get cranked up, but like Chris Bassitt maybe could be had, or a Michael Lorenzen or Tyler Anderson, and they wouldn't cost quite as much as Alcantara. If the Marlins are talking to you about Alcantara, they're sending a private jet for at least two of your top prospects, because he's controllable. He's $17 million this year. He's $17 million next year. And you got a $21 million club option in 2027 for a guy who would be your ace.
I'm not talking necessarily about a pick six or something like that.
Oh, whose voice is that? Did the Cubs' 16-0 victory over the Dodgers Saturday night, the worst shutout loss in the team's history, serve as an exorcism of the demons of Japan? Where are you with the series after results of Sunday Night Baseball?
Great weekend in L.A. for the Cubs. But I think, we've got to tap the brakes. The Dodgers have the pedigree. They've got the experience. They're built to win in the postseason. They've been playing without their all-star first baseman, Freddie Freeman. As I mentioned earlier in the show, I think there are questions that need to be answered about the back of the Cubs bullpen with Ryan Presley, who did close the game out last night. Michael Busch has been hitting the ball really well, and I think you guys talked about that last week, like him being in the cleanup hole and where he's at in the lineup, and he's hitting the ball really well. Pete Crow Armstrong.
What a game last night.
Yeah. Two
perfect, solo homers and a triple.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, really got after it. But a really good weekend, but they're not ready to battle with the Dodgers yet, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think winning the series means you're ready to battle with them, as you put it, Brad. But it takes the little bit of the sting of what you found out about Justin Steele out of the equation. And now it makes tonight's start by Jameson Taillon, kind of piggybacking off the last question, like he really needs to take a step up, because at least for the moment, he is now your number two, Jameson Taillon. And he has not looked like a number two. He's an innings eater, nice guy, but does not look like a number two.
Talking about Bush and PCA, the Ben Brown start.
Yeah.
Now that looked like a different Ben Brown with some efficiency with his pitches. I think he was through 70% strikes against the Dodgers, and you've seen him get into bad counts where the hitter's at an advantage. You saw him last year. I think he made 8 starts for the Cubs last season, and in 3 of them, he was able to complete 5 innings. And there, at times you look at the stuff and you're like, wow, this guy could potentially be something special. But he's got to harness it. He's got to command it. He's got to do it with consistency. And he looked dynamite against a stacked Dodgers lineup, even without Freddie Freeman.
Well, Freddie took some at-bats this weekend, right?
Yeah, he played. I thought that the 16-0 victory, I was expecting a better answer on that one from you in terms of exorcism.
Well, the Dodgers they let the Kasperius guy eat it, right? They were just leaving him in there.
Yeah, I know. But Dustin was so worked up over those two games. You feel better now, don't you?
I do, but I was agreeing with Brad that I don't think it means you're ready to compete, but it means something. It was all about getting through April, and now especially with this Justin Steele news, it's about getting through April at a right around 500 record. When you win two out of three on the road in L.A. to start a road trip,
that's what I'm saying.
That's a great start.
It's phenomenal.
It's a phenomenal start.
And they've been doing that. They've been winning games. They've been winning series. It's fun to see. I think that it was great that they went out to L.A. You know, they ran into a buzzsaw. Yamamoto was unbelievable in that first start. And, you know, I thought that I was impressed with Matthew Boyd pitching as well as he did.
He's throwing well.
He threw well. You know, a couple of – it's basically one inning, a couple of bad pitches, and you lose the game. I was disappointed that they didn't have more of a response to support him, but they ran into a really good pitcher.
He's been – Boyd's been very
excellent.
Good too.
Yeah.
You just – can he hold up?
Well, that's the question – when you signed him and you knew that, but he's 2 years removed from the surgery, you hope he can. But I think that the 16-0 one was just, I'll tell you something else. To come back and, you know, amid everything that's going on, right? You hear, oh, they're gonna sign PCA. They offered him 72. Oh, they didn't offer him that much. So there's this whole thing out there about extending him and then he has that outing with the two solo homers and the triple, and I thought of Dustin predicting, what year was it, Dustin, that he would be the biggest star in Chicago?
Apparently, 2028?
28. Apparently, they believe that because they're trying to make sure that he's with them then. I thought it was a very important series to just get. First of all, the Dodgers look messed up. They don't look very good. They're making errors, and they're not doing a great job. They got almost too much talent to figure out what they have. It's a problem for them. But it was excellent. And it's great that they're mortal now.
Good weekend for them. Good, as you said, good start to the road trip.
What was the other part of that question?
That's the voice of John Heyman. He's with you guys at 7:25. How instrumental was Chase Mydra's contribution to the White Sox first series victory this weekend? Broke up the no-hitter, sending Garrett Crochet to the shower on Sunday, his greatest contribution. Even if the White Sox eventually lost 3-1, is he bigger, better version of Nick Madrigal?
That I like the Nick Madrigal comp because I was told that's what Nick Madrigal was. And, you know, it was like he was Stephen Kwan or something. Like Nick Madrigal was going to come in here and he wasn't going to be able to hit for power, but he hit all over everywhere and he could play great baseball. I never saw like him on the bases as very good. You know, I know he got hurt, but he seemed to get hurt a lot. He seemed like a little guy. This guy is like a bigger, stronger version of that. He's got a weird kind of body. I saw Ozzie and Chuck after the game, and Ozzie compared him to the kid from Sandlot. what is that kid's name? The guy who called his own shot. Remember that kid? He had the kid's name. It was hysterical.
I mean, maybe
it was
funny. Maybe the face. That's what it was.
Yeah. No. But it was hysterical, and I think that, you know, he comes up, he walks three times, and he gets a hit. And they end up winning a game that you never thought they'd even be in. And then they come back. And I he was on base in that game, too. He's been on base all three games. He played some shortstop. He played second. Boy, he's got like a – he's a pretty good defensive player. He's quick.
Yeah.
You know,
he gets through
the ball quickly.
He can play really probably three spots in the infield.
Yeah.
And the issue is what Nick Madrigal – was and what he was supposed to be are two completely different
things.
Totally
different.
Completely different things. I think this guy's...
We learned that on both sides of town.
Yeah, this guy can be a better version of what Madrigal was supposed to be. I mean, because this guy's 5'10", like close to 200 pounds. Like, you're looking at a guy that's put together. Madrigal was... You knew he...
Wispy little fella.
Yeah. Wasn't big enough.
Benny the Jet Rodriguez is who you were thinking about, I believe, from the Sandlot Mully?
No.
The kid who called a shot, though.
No, the heavyset kid.
Oh, the catcher.
Yeah, what was his name?
That was hilarious. That was Ham. Hamilton Porter.
Ham Porter. Okay. That's what Ozzy called this
guy. Yeah, well, I think which it's because of the face.
It's facially. But it was so funny. They had a photo of each guy up there, and it was so mean.
I know my Sandlot.
Good for you. Go ahead, Dustin. We didn't get you.
Okay. Well, we're kind of a little out of order this morning. It's fine. Yeah, I think it was good. There was a spark. They beat the Red Sox 2 out of 3, and he was the guy called up to replace a bunch of guys that were injured and not getting the job done.
He was one of the guys called up. They've been...
Yeah. But he was the guy that did something.
Right.
And they won. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, and better yet, we're gonna see him in the lineup almost every game. Like, there's going to be a place for him to play.
Plus, he wanted to pay back the Red Sox, right? He was drafted by them and let go traded away or whatever.
Yeah, I just think he's excited for an opportunity to be in the big leagues, to have a chance to prove that he belongs in the big leagues and is going to stay in the big leagues. And exciting players like that, the White Sox, keep them coming. They need more of them.
Wow. You know, it's a scary good question, right?
Voice of Bruce Levine, 8 a.m. with you guys. What did you make of Luis Robert Jr. getting his first homer and scoring the winning run in the ninth to seal a series win for the White Sox on Saturday afternoon? Robert went down 0-2 to Aroldis Chapman, but worked a walk, stole second, scored on Brooks Baldwin's game winner. Why do you believe the Dodgers have tabled trade talks for Roberts? Are the Sox asking for too much?
I don't think the Dodgers need an outfielder right now. Tommy Edman has been playing out there for them, and he's got a ton of versatility that we saw previously when he was with the St. Louis Cardinals. Luis Robert, his contract is pretty high. The Dodgers don't need to make a move for him right now. For him to work that walk after going down 0-2 to Aroldis Chapman, that's what you want to see more of from him. Like, that's what you saw him commanding at bats back in 2023 when he was a standout player. Can the Sox deal him and get a good price? You know, you ask, are they asking too much? I think three things need to happen. Number one, he's going to have to play well over an extended period of time. Number two, he's going to have to remain healthy. And number three, I think you're going to have a team that has an unexpected need crop up because of injury or whatever else. Maybe the Dodgers are that team. Maybe it's another team that's in competition. But it would probably be a rental for Robert because of his contract situation and a club option for next year. So I don't know that they'll get a ton for him. But if he plays well and stays healthy, there should be an opportunity.
Got Bob Nightingale with you guys at 9. He can help answer this question as well. I think for two things. The Dodgers don't have to have him right now, to your point, Brad. And then on the flip side, everybody in the league knows that the White Sox want to move the guy. So when that's the situation, the bargaining isn't as good.
Yeah, that's true. I just think that... I'm kind of getting to a point where I'm getting a little antsy about it because of what you said, not point number one about him playing well, but point number two about him staying healthy.
Yeah, right.
Just because the track record isn't there.
You'd see him get on a heater and then start working the phones.
Yeah. I was hoping that we would have a conversation, and maybe Bob can tell us this, but I was hoping that like a team like the Reds or a team like Philly that was interested in him sees that there's talk with the Dodgers and thinks, well, we were always going to pick this guy up later. Maybe we should make a move on him. Because they don't, there's, right now, they're, as Dustin said, everyone knows they're going to move him. They're going to get much for him for all those reasons.
Well, you're not going to get, and it's a rental. It's, yeah. You need to pay him this year. What's he getting? $17 million this year.
Yep.
And he's,
I think he's got another year at 17, and then he's got an option, right?
Is that think it's a club option next year with a $2 million buyout. And he's hitting a buck 63 right now. Now, he had a nice spring, okay? He had 4 home runs in spring. I think he batted over 300. he's got to heat up, or this is a conversation that's really pointless.
You know, I knew that question would come up.
What are your thoughts on the Bears making Kyler Gordon the NFL's highest-paid slot corner with a reported 3-year, $40 million extension, locks him with the club until 2028? Is he worth that deal, which includes $31.25 million in guaranteed cash?
Yeah, he's worth the deal. I think he's a pretty good player. I thought he would I think he has a chance to be like a really good player. I'd like to see him be capable of staying on the field longer. I think that he's missed some games, which is just part of his crazy athleticism and his, you know, ability to do so many different things, but you got to be on the field. I like them that they made the move. They've been talking about it. This is the first guy that the general manager drafted, so he gets to reward him, and that says a lot considering I don't know what's going to happen with the safety. So I think it's a good thing. I think you need a slot receiver, a very important position in the NFL. And I don't know that it takes a lot of pressure off the draft. I know some people want to sell it that way, but you're going to have him either way. I think the question that I can't answer, maybe you can, Brad, is how they feel about Tyreek Stevenson.
Yeah.
See that to me is that if you're talking about drafting someone, you're talking about drafting someone for him. And I don't even know if they feel good about Terrell Smith if that doesn't work out, because it's a new coaching staff and new people in here, and we don't know what the defense coordinator thinks.
I agree with you, Mully, that he's a good player, but he does need to be on the field more often. I guess my question is, when you're paying somebody like this, and I haven't looked at all the money that's paid to each corner, but like, can he make the move up to be the second cornerback? And could you move Stevenson to be the third cornerback, or is it specific to this slot role position that he seems to do very, very well at? I'm just saying, for that kind of dough, you want him not only out there when you're in nickel and dime, which I understand you're out there way more than normal, but wouldn't you want him out there all the time?
He plays a lot. The other thing is he
really
can blitz.
Yeah,
I mean
that,
he's really good if you send
That's him. A starting position, really.
It's a starting position.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, you're talking about more than probably 80% of the snaps.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think that
he's a big three-down linebacker guy.
Oh, he just wants linebackers on the field all the time. That's beautiful. Missed two games last year. Missed four games in 2023. So I think that's a small piece of it, but played so well, is a professional, has gotten better in how he studies and prepares. And so he moved past Michael Carter II of the Jets, Teron Johnson of the Bills. Those guys were at the top of the slot cornerback market, making a 10.25 annually. You can slice and dice this extension a few different ways. It's a 3-year extension that adds on to this 2025 season, where he's already under contract for $3.6 million. So you bundle all the numbers together, and the new money he's getting is about $10.9, almost $11 million annually. So that's above the 10.25 for Michael Carter and Teron Johnson. And I think Kyler's earned it. And it will be interesting, to your point, Molly, to see what happens at that other starting spot opposite Jalen Johnson with Tyreek Stevenson and Terrell Smith. And I don't think they've got probably any sweeping takeaways yet. They certainly shouldn't if the new coaching staff is going into this open-minded and without preconceived notions.
This will be a pick six. There's your ball game.
Bulls finished out their season with a 20-point victory at the 76ers, finishing with a 39-43 record. They'll host the Heat Wednesday night over at the United Center. Do you consider their season a success?
No, because we're not handing out participation trophies. We're not going to take the kids for Dairy Queen after the ball game. They're 39-43. They're ninth place in the Eastern Conference. A couple things have been positive this year. You know, over the last 25 games or so, I think you can believe in the development of some younger players on the team. They've changed the offensive philosophy this season. That seems to have worked. You're curious about the future with some of the younger players right now, but 39-43, ninth place in the, you know, godforsaken play-in tournament. It's not a success.
You mean the Heat Bulls Classic? That's what this play-in tournament is going to be renamed, right?
For an opportunity to go play the Cavaliers who swept them 4-0.
First you'd have to win that game. Then you get to play the loser, right? Of the 7-8
Orlando
game.
And Atlanta.
Right. And that
which would be Friday.
That doesn't bode well to me. I think the Bulls would maybe be able to beat the Hawks. I don't know they could beat the Magic.
They're trying to sell the idea of this postseason experience being good for young players.
I believe in that, Brad. I actually do personally believe in that. I think the development of Matas Buzelis has been good. Again, he's your guy. You're developing him. You have him on the rookie deal. You got rid of Max LaVine. He's out west now, and you still finish what you did last year, and you're running a new scheme to your point that they hadn't run in the past. Is Kobe White, here's the real question, okay? Is Kobe White a max player? Is that the next?
You make that decision after next season, I believe. Yes.
Right, but I'm saying that the question, do they have the star on their team right now? Buzelis developing, right? But in this league, in order to win and not be in these types of games, you need a superstar, and I don't know that the Bulls have one yet.
You almost need two superstars.
Well, to get to June.
I thought we decided that the Joker was coming here. Didn't we have that conversation? Him and Giannis added to this group. It'd be pretty good.
For Matas Buzelis and Kobe White.
Yeah.
Okay, and then what?
You know, yeah. I mean, so, well, who cares?
So the Joker's playing with Kevin Herter.
After that, who cares? Kevin Herter had another good game. Much better
than I thought. I thought he was basically a bag of balls.
Are you a Herter or a hater? I just need to get that clarified.
Depends on if it's Thursday or Friday.
I think the Bulls, okay, now again, if we look at this in a vacuum, I think the Bulls had a fun year. I don't want to call it a success because they were below 500, but they got to that. Don't forget, like, DeMar DeRozan left, and they trade Zach LaVine. They got to that record, basically the same record, the same position, the play-in game against the Heat. They got all that without those guys, which tells you a lot about their team and how. But they, I think Dustin, Josh Giddey is another guy that you're developing. He got better as the year went on. Kobe hit a different level.
What are you going to pay Giddey?
I think that's a great question. But I think that you're going to pay him and you're going to keep him. And you got three guys you like, maybe four. Maybe you like five guys out of that group. I'm just saying. They're in the Eastern Conference. They're not in the West. They're against the worst teams, not the best teams.
Right, and they're ninth. They're ninth.
I know.
Like, that's just.
But I'm just saying, from the point, you know, Billy kind of tries this new style. Their pacing is a lot faster. This was a team that couldn't even attempt a three-pointer. They're hitting three-pointers. I think they had a really decent year for them. But we're judging it based on who left and who stayed and where they're at. And maybe
yeah,
that's
I mean, I just feel like I feel
yeah,
like
you're right.
I'm moving the bar for yes, them. Yes. And I just don't believe they deserve the benefit of the doubt.
You've got to do some gymnastics to credit them with anything. But they were one of the handful of teams that played hard every night. And that's how they won a bunch of games
in the
NBA. It's just the reality of it, and I thought they were young and fun, and we'll figure this out, right? It should be fun. We've got the extra point next. It's Brad Biggs in today, Mully and Haw on the score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mullion Haw on 670 The Score.
What did you make of the final round of the Masters? Who choked? Who played above themselves? And how will you remember this tournament?
I think you remember the tournament because Rory McIlroy is able to finally complete the Grand Slam and not defeat himself and overcome some self-created obstacles throughout the entire tournament, throughout the final round on Sunday, the huge shot on 17 with the go, and then kind of putting himself back together after he fails to close it out on 18 and go ahead and defeat Justin Rose. I mean, it was terrific theater. And who choked? Rory choked some yesterday.
Yes,
I think
he did.
Which is what made it great. And DeChambeau, obviously,
he choked too.
Gets off to a hot start and then just has some really regrettable holes. So Justin Rose choked. Like, I think everybody kind of took their turn, and that's what made it compelling television on Sunday.
It was awesome TV. The last 90 minutes or so, you couldn't your eyes off of it. It was so good. I got to watch it with my dad. That was super cool. I mean, DeChambeau choked. He had the lead. After two holes, he had the lead, and he just went.
He gave it right back. Hey, take it. I don't want this.
Right.
Take it.
He just gave it right back, and he was so likable after his round on Saturday. How much he enjoyed walking from the 18th green back to the what's the right word for it, Brad? The clubhouse? Is that, you're allowed to say clubhouse at the Masters? to sign his scorecard. He was so relatable. And
did you see the story about what he did Saturday night?
Yeah.
He was going for a walk in the neighborhood where he's renting a house for the week, and there were people putting in the backyard, and he goes and he hangs out and he just putts with these guys for like an hour.
Yeah. I mean, he just
man of the people.
Man of the people. I mean, it was hard. I was texting with buddies on Sunday morning. I said, okay, are we cheering for Rory or are we going to get behind Bryson? And then Justin Rose was a guy who choked.
Yeah.
Played his tail off on Sunday to force a playoff. This guy has led 10 rounds of the Masters and never won it. He's the only guy. He's one other guy to ever go into a playoff and still not
and
win.
And he lost that one.
And he lost that one to
Sergio. Right.
Yeah. So it was great. It's a great tournament. If you're not into golf, I understand that. But this is like an event to get you into golf.
Yeah. I mean, listen. The weekend. What you will remember is Rory's breakthrough. It is Rory getting the career Grand Slam. It's 11 years later. Rory keeping it together somehow. He choked about four different times over the course of the weekend. I mean, for the love of God, I don't know what you call his opening round and his closing round. It was ridiculous. And he had the thing won a couple different times and choked it away and then somehow won it. It was just watching a person go through honest to God, you could write, if you were a psychologist or a psychiatrist, you could write a book on what golf does to a man based on his performance in that tournament. It was extraordinary. Four double bogeys and he still wins the Masters. He went through every emotion known to man. And I, honest to God, it was like watching a guy with this weight on him and trying to play. It was, Sisyphus walking up the hill with a boulder, and it kept coming back down and walking back up, and he finally broke through. God, that was awesome. What a great moment in sports. And he kept falling apart, and every time they would say something to him about his parents, he kind of fell apart. And then they show him getting on the golf cart, and he's like, I got to call mom and dad. It was beautiful. And he's a 35-year-old man who's been carrying this for 14 years because he was 21 when he had the meltdown. And somebody asked him what he would say to his younger self. And he was kind of like, that kid didn't know anything, hadn't been anywhere, done anything. It was just extraordinary. And God bless him. It really was a phenomenal sporting event and a great thing that will be remembered mainly because of him. All right, we've got to get to a break. 312-644-6767. We got Bigsy here. Any questions you have, he's willing to answer them or at least respond. It's Mully and Haw with Brad Biggs on The Score.
The 0-1 to Crow Armstrong, swinging a drive, center field and deep. Back goes Edmund, back near the fence. It's got a chance, gone! Pete Crow Armstrong with a long home run, his second of the game. And the kid from Sherman Oaks, which is about 30 miles away from here, is putting on a show in front of friends and family. What a blast for Pete.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That is the Great Clip of the Week. It's brought to you by Great Clips. Go to Great Clips for your next haircut. It's gonna be great. Mully and Haw on The Score. We've got Brad Biggs here, the football man from the Chicago Tribune, sitting in. You just finished your 2.0. You'll do three mocks, right, Brad? You'll do one right before the draft, but that was the second. Are you planning on squeezing out a fourth or a fifth? What are you thinking?
No, I think one more will probably
clarify your thinking.
Yeah, and maybe in the final one I'll take some extremely wild guesses about what could be available and on the board in round two, when they have the multiple picks at 39 and 41.
Are they going to hang on to those picks? I keep reading people speculating they could, they're going to take the two and move into the bottom of the first.
The reason you go into the bottom of round one is if you see a guy that, not sure if he's going to make it to us, and we really like the idea about getting a fifth-year option in the contract. You've got another year of affordable team control. But I look at it, this is a team that was in last place with a whole bunch of needs. I think you need to keep your picks and give yourself as many options as possible to improve your football team.
Would you trade down, perhaps?
I think you'd be certainly open to it at 10, and unless the player, one of the handful of players you were looking at saying, boy, it would be like Christmas morning if he was available. Like if that guy is sitting there at 10 when you're on the clock, no, you don't trade down.
Right.
You take that guy. For the many reasons that people talk about teams not wanting to trade up, I'm not sure that there's going to be a trade down partner for them though at 10. Like, is someone going to want to come from 13 or 16 up to that? Like,
what if the quarterbacks don't go? By all accounts, what is the latest?
Well,
Derek
Carr has a problem, and that's beyond what he's put on tape the past couple of years. And New Orleans sitting at 9 could be making a move on a quarterback there, right?
Right.
So
that's what you want. You want three quarterbacks to go in the top 10 because that means someone good is going to fall to you.
I'd be really surprised if three quarterbacks.
Jackson Dart's not going to be the third guy that squeezes into the top 10. But then look at all the quarterbacks that won last year. You know, weird things happen with that position. But the more, the merrier, because the more that go, that gives you more of an opportunity to get one of those players.
Yeah, I mean, players at positions where you're like, they're not taking a player at that position.
Yeah.
Like, I'd be awful surprised if they took a wide receiver. So.
Kid from Arizona. Is that the guy that everyone's talking about?
I kind of like Golden from Texas, who moves real well.
Yeah. All right. We're going to be right back. We will talk some draft with Brad Biggs. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of The Score.